Hello, and welcome to another edition of Inside Network Marketing. This is your host, Len Clements, and it is April 20th. It's a Sunday. It's Easter, but for us self-employed entrepreneurs, there are no holidays and weekends. So I and my co-host, Randy Mitchell, and Kathy Wilcox, who does still have one of those JOBs. So,
yeah,
we got to get her off this show and back to a life here pretty soon. But they have also joined me again back on the call. Welcome, Randy. Welcome, Kathy.
Hello.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Woohoo! Yes.
Yeah.
And, this is show number 26, I believe, and we're going to be talking today about, I want to just kind of wrap up the issue with Vima and their alleged change to affiliate marketing as opposed to multi-level marketing, and kind of just put some loose ends, kind of wrap those up. And then we'll get to the news. And but I do really want to talk about this one last issue, because I think it does go so much deeper than just, semantics or a company changing their name. Randy, I know you've listened to some of the interviews that BK has done out there. BK Breakout, by the way, for those of you who are not familiar with this, let me just kind of summarize what's been going on. BK Breakout is the founder and CEO of Vima. Vima's been around for many years now, about 8 or 9 years. They used to be New Vision, which has been around many years before that. They kind of operated concurrently at one time, and then New Vision went away. Everybody moved over to Vima. And it's a very well-respected, good company, great products. BK is considered one of the more honorable, reputable, good guys in the industry. I consider him a friend. I consider him a really good guy as well. One of the more unusual guests into the kitchen. That's what I call the segment where I get to ask all the tough questions like I just did in my interview with BK recently. But sometimes good people in this business do things that are just a little screwy. So the rest of the industry's response to this seems to be very divided. They're very polarized. Is BK doing the right thing, claiming he's no longer MLM, even though he's basically got the exact same comp plan he ever had, a binary unilevel match type comp plan, and he's just changing the names of things? And what's the repercussions of one of the more well-respected companies that's out there in the MLM space suddenly claiming they're not MLM? How does that affect the rest of the industry? And the changes that they've made, do they really change them enough to make them not MLM? That's been the debate. There are some like myself, Kevin Thompson, Mel Atwood, and various others that are kind of on the side of this is not the right way to do this, and there are implications that go beyond just, again, simple semantics. And there are people on the other side who are not here to defend themselves. Since they're on the opposite side of me, I won't name them. But they have done various interviews with BK as well, too. And every time I get done listening to their interviews with him, the first thing I think of is they should all just go get a room. So it's they're a little bit on the other side to the extreme. Obligatorily sort of agreeing and congratulating him for everything that he does, and I just don't get that. So, Randy, just kind of kick this off. What is your take on Vima or really any of these companies, Mary Kay, Melaleuca, these types of companies that are sort of these denialist type companies, deniers that claim they're not MLM, even though they clearly have a multi-level compensation plan?
Well, you know what? I think it's pretty interesting that they try to say that they're not something that is clear that they are. And I think with this particular instance, it's really a little disappointing because it is, Vima, in my opinion, is one of, like you said, one of the very good companies that are out there and a good representation of what's possible in MLM, just in the amounts that they pay out in their commissions and so forth. And when you look at them and the Mary Kays and some other companies that, will tell you, oh, no, we're not MLM, even though their structure is the same as any MLM company. And I think it's time for, as we've been talking about, it's really time for people to understand how great the industry is. And, we can fight back against all this negative perception. But one of the things, I'm so excited to hear you talk more about this, because as I was listening to the interview, you really turned up the heat in the kitchen, right? And there was a few moments in there, I was like, oh, boy, it's a good thing you guys are not in the same room. A lot of respect for each other, but there seemed to be, a lot of anger towards, like he was just mad because he really was dodging some of your questions and not really directly answering the facts. And I was just curious, and I know that you spent a lot more time with him, on this and even other conversations. Why would you think this? Why do you think they're taking this kind of approach?
Well, I think there's several reasons, and I kind of got the same. I saw it more as frustration, I think, than anger, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, but I kind of got that too. And by the way, for anyone who listens to the interview, stick with it because the heat does kind of get turned up about 20 minutes in. A lot of interview subjects, they kind of And I think it's just natural. They don't intend to do it, but they kind of like turn a lot of things into like more like a sales pitch because they're just so passionate about their company. They want to get all the good news out there.
Right.
You know, I understand that. So I kind of give them a little slack in the beginning, any interview subject I do that wants to talk about their company and how they're doing it. But eventually you got to kind of like rein them in and say, okay, enough of the sales pitch, answer the question. So do stick with it. You know, I think that creating the illusion that they're not MLM is to try to, and BK said this, he's been very candid about it, to kind of get away from the stigma of MLM. You know, if someone says, is this MLM? And you say yes, the conversation shuts down. Mm-hmm. If you say it's more like affiliate marketing or it's more like Amazon than Amway, the conversation will continue. I get that up to that point. And he's also been very open about he wants to kind of get away from MLM with all this legal stuff going on with Herbalife. You know, BK has said there's a storm out to sea. We don't want it to blow in. We don't think it'll blow in. But if it does, we got to be ready, which implies typical MLM companies are not ready for this. There's something about them that's legally suspect. And again, his language in these various interviews, and I don't know why I didn't catch this. I was probably thinking about my next question or something. But even in my interview, he made a statement I didn't really hear until after I read it back. Otherwise, I would have done something with it during the interview. But he said, there's a lot of MLMs right now that are recycling the same concepts. And these are almost, this is almost a quote, recycling the same concepts as KM.net did, that BigSmart did, mm-hmm. and that SkyBiz did.
Yep.
And this is what, and this is his words, this is what's fashionable right now in the industry. That is so utterly wrong and so... That's a misrepresentation of the industry, like some anti-MLM zealot would make about us. I mean, KM.net and BigSmart were internet shopping malls where you got a bunch of money from affiliate fees from online people like Amazon, which ironically kind of does make them a little more closer to Amazon than a typical MLM company. SkyBiz sold worthless websites, and these were all companies from back in the 90s that were all shut down for being pyramid schemes, and there's no MLM companies out there. I can think of two that are even internet mall kind of related right now, and out of 900 companies, and nothing like SkyBiz. These are not representative of practically anything that's out there in the industry right now, let alone fashionable of it. But to imply that that's the kind of crap now that's fashionable in the industry, so we got to get away from this industry, is a horrible misrepresentation. Now, not to say that there aren't a lot of bad companies out there, but these are representative of like the bottom ugliest 5% mm-hmm. of the industry. That's not at all fashionable or what's representative of everything that's out there. So, and like I said in the interview, you know, they're MLM in every legal definition. The FTC's defined MLM. They have. People have been saying, oh, FTC never defined MLM. They did in court cases, but there's a definition section in those court decrees, and the FTC says, here's what an MLM company is. So they're MLM. There's no question about it. And if there is some legal action against the industry, if that storm comes into shore and we all get hit with this, because don't believe for a second this is just an Herbalife battle. What they're going after Herbalife for right now applies to every company if Herbalife should lose on those issues. So you're all in trouble here if Herbalife loses. We'll get to that in a later part of the show. But the point is that it's like the analogy I made is like there's this ship called MLM, and Melaleuca and Mary Kay and now Vima are tied to it by this inseparable chain. They're in their little dinghy trying to row away from it, but that chain's got them hooked to that ship. And that ship is taking on a little bit of water right now. So like I said at the end of the interview, which I kind of borrowed from my book, Inside Network Marketing, is you know, rather than trying to saw through that chain, maybe they might want to grab a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we all need to stand up and say, look, we're all good MLM companies. Here's the representations of good MLM companies, and use them as an example of what's right in this industry, rather than to have those good representations of MLM companies suddenly deny they were even MLM. So again, there's an implication here that goes much, much deeper than just, I mean, BK said in the interview, like, I'm hung up on labels. I'm exactly the opposite of that. Yeah. Call it whatever you want to call it. I'm concerned about what it actually is and what will actually be perceived to be by everyone out there. You know, when someone says, is this MLM, BK now wants his people to say, no, it's more like an affiliate marketing program, except it pays a lot better. It's more like Amazon than Amway. Now, granted, that may keep that conversation going a little longer, but at some point, you're going to get to your binary compensation plan, and then the prospect's going to go, okay, you lied to me. This is MLM, obviously, and now you've lost them permanently. Every MLM leader out there at one time was skeptical of this industry. I mean, not everyone. Everyone I know. If you listen to the story, almost everyone of them will say in the beginning, I was skeptical of this. Some of them will say, I thought it was an outright scam. Yet somebody turned them around. Someone got them to open their mind and really look at it, make their own decision. And now they're the more successful distributors. So there's ways to get those people that are turned off by, is it MLM? Yes. You know, to turn around and consider it. But when you say no, and then they discover that it is, there's no coming back from that.
Okay. If I may interject as the person who has, I'm the outsider looking in. And to quote probably one of my least favorite presidents, it really depends on what the definition of is. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So other than that, I do have a, just to kind of calm things down just a little bit, because I can sense you're getting a little bit, you know, you're just escalating just a tad, so I just want to give you a chance to bring it down a little bit.
You sound like you have some experience with gauging my levels of frustration and anger during a debate.
You know, just a nad's worth. That's all. Yeah. Just a little bit.
For new listeners, Kathy is actually my ex-wife. So,
okay. True story.
Yeah.
That always cracks me up. When
I know, me too, still. I don't know.
It's like a deep, dark secret. Anyway, just to interject, I have a little bit of experience, not directly with the company, but with in my former employed life prior to what I'm doing right now. I did work for Mercedes-Benz, and a number of their distributors would come in, and they're all extremely young, very enthusiastic about the company, couldn't say enough good things about it, and actually employed some of the things that I incorporate in my daily life, like positive affirmations and vision boards and, you know, really being positive and how we can help others and that kind of thing. And they, one of the things, and correct me if I'm wrong, they do offer a expense, what's it called? What am I looking
for? A car program?
A what?
Like a car program?
A car program. Depending on your level, you can get a car allowance is what I was trying to think of. So, and apparently it was pretty generous, because all of these, and all, for lack of a better word, I'll say kids, because they all actually could be my kids, age-wise. But they were all looking at high-end Beamers and Volvos and Audis and Range Rovers and Mercedes-Benz, and very excited about the prospect of getting achieving this level and getting their car allowance and coming in to buy a car, which was, I thought, was really a very exciting component of their program.
Yeah, like they sit in the cars and people take pictures of them, put them on dream boards, that kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. I thought that was great.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, and that's the thing. And Vima is actually one of those companies, not that I don't want to go into a sales pitch with them either, but unlike some other companies out there with car programs, you don't see a disproportionate number of cars getting repoed. You know, I've seen companies go, yeah, we're giving out, you know, 30 Beamers a day, but they never tell you how many Beamers are getting repossessed or taken back or you losing the allowance for.
Yes.
If that's 29 a day, that's not so good. So, no, yeah, Vima is a representation of a good MLM company, you know, one that we can point to and say that's an example of how you should be doing this. Especially now after some of the changes that they've made. And I was kind of ignorant myself as to some of the things they were doing before, which weren't so good, but now they've changed that, and that's better. The point is that it doesn't make them not MLM. So what I want to do just real quickly here is it's uninterrupted and kind of in a more fluid way, is I'm going to identify every single point that BK has identified that Vima is now doing differently than what he believes other MLM companies are doing. Just take them one by one, which is what I tried to do in the interview. But, of course, that's hard to do in free form like that, because we're trying to go in all different directions and going off on tangents and so forth. So we're one by one, here are each of the things BK says Vima is now doing differently that somehow differentiates them from MLM and makes them more like Amazon or an affiliate marketing program, which, by the way, is one level. And you earn like most, usually a little single-digit percentage. You can get up to 10%. Most of them are single-digit percentage on one level. Like right now, if you go to my InsideNM.com website, Inside Network Marketing, which I assume most of you probably are on to hear this show, if you go to the homepage and click through that Amazon banner there, I get a little percentage of your sales for anything that you buy through there to help, you know, support Inside Network Marketing. But that's a one-level affiliate-type thing. That's what most people think of when they see an affiliate program. Now, affiliate programs can be multi-tier. They can be two levels or more levels. Once you go to a second level, technically based on the definitions that are out there of MLM, you're multi-level. The definition, by the way, of multi-level legally is if you have an incentive, a financial incentive, to recruit another salesperson. Okay, if you recruit another salesperson and you get something from their sales, that's a second level, that's it, that's MLM. Now again, that's how the FTC's defined it. That's also based on the DSA's definition. That's based on a consortium of five of the top MLM attorneys who wrote a letter describing MLM on behalf of the MLMIA, and they all have the exact same definition. So they went from not counting customer volume towards a distributor's personal volume, which they call affiliates now. Okay, affiliates, but I'm going to call them distributors. That's a generic term for person who's in the business. So they don't count. They didn't count personal volume or towards your personal volume, any customer volume. So if I had a whole bunch of customers buying volume, that didn't count towards my personal volume qualification. Now they count half of your customer volume towards your personal volume qualification. Here's the thing. I don't know of a single other MLM company other than Melaleuca where you have to buy your personal volume to qualify. And BK's actually said in an interview that, you know, unlike other MLMs where you have to buy your volume every month, in our company now, customer volume can't have it. That's completely untrue. Now, I believe it, he honestly doesn't know this. I never believe in a million years that BK would say something deliberately untrue. I don't believe that for a second. But he is wrong. Virtually every other MLM company allows 100% of your customer volume to count towards your personal volume qualification, and it's considered legally taboo to make distributors have to buy their product to qualify, like, for example, a required auto ship program or something like that. FEMA was doing that at one time, but now they're not. Now they at least count half the customer volume. But again, the rest of the industry is counting all of it. So they're still a little behind, and they still have a greater incentive in FEMA to personally purchase the product rather than get customers, because they made it twice as hard for the customer volume to count to meet your quota. So that's not only not different, it's not even better than most of our companies are doing it. No sign-up fee or annual renewal fee. They don't charge you for a back office or a website. All of that is free. Now, this is the one area where I will say that is significantly different than how most other companies do it. There are a few that have no sign-up fee, but this is different. But the one thing that you can point to that says they're different really doesn't obviously make them not MLM, but it's I'm not even sure it's that healthy, because I think you should have some barrier to entry. I mean, think about this. If you start a Taco Bell franchise for $1.5 million, I heard recently somebody tell me, like, franchises have a 97% success rate. It's 97%. Now, that's not true. It's more like 63%, but still a lot higher than regular businesses.
Very high.
Yeah. It's MLM, with all of its advantages and benefits, it should have just as high a success rate. Well, there's one big difference, though. When you put $1.5 million into your Taco Bell franchise, you're going to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes to make money. You got $1.5 million on the line.
Yep.
Now, when you put $25 for a distributor kit on the line and you get a couple of no's, you throw it in the, you know, in the garage, and that's the end of it. You're done. That's why we have such a massive failure rate in this industry, because it's just so easy to quit.
Quit, yep.
So let's go from that $25, $35, $50 distributor kit or entry fee down to zero. So instead of a $25 kit, now you have a free sign-up. Who do you gain? Who do you gain in that scenario? Only one class of distributor.
Yeah.
The ones who would have joined if it's free but wouldn't have invested $25 into their business. If they would have invested $25 either way, you would have got them for $25. The only ones you gain are the ones that say, I will not put $25 into my business, but I'll join if it's free. How is that healthy? It's a good thing to have a barrier to entry of some amount in your business opportunity.
Absolutely.
Well, isn't there a perceived value when you have to actually pay for something rather than when it's free? I mean, how many times has that been shown?
Well, that goes to the back office. I mean, if you pay $9.95 or $12.95 a month for your back office and your sales website and so forth, you're more likely to use it because you've got some money on the line. But if it's all free, who cares if I use it or don't use it? So it's all about incentives, and there's just no incentive to do anything. So free, as far as getting into the business opportunity, I just don't see how that's a healthy thing. So yeah, it is a little unique, but I just don't see how it's better. They don't have a distributor kit. BK pointed that out in the interview. Well, they do. It's just virtual, like most companies are doing now. They're going to downloadable virtual kits, or you can just go online to get all your distributor information or whatever. But they don't actually physically send you a kit in the mail, but that's not unusual at all. No auto ship requirements to receive bonuses. Well, that's great, and that's also like the vast majority of MLM companies. If you require auto ship, distributor has to be on auto ship, then how can customer volume count? You have to buy it yourself. So the only way that volume can occur is by recruiting someone, because only a new recruit would create that volume, because it's a forced autoship. It's considered legally taboo. Almost every attorney out there will tell you, don't require your distributors to be on autoship to qualify. You can incentivize it in many ways, but you can't require them to buy their own product to be on autoship. So that's great that Veeam is doing that, but it's not unlike the large majority of other MLM companies. Charges the same price for customers as they do distributors. There's no retail markup. That is relatively unusual. There are several other companies, not the majority by any means, but just off the top of my head, Melaleuca and USANA do the same thing. So obviously that doesn't make them not MLM companies. But what it does, though, is it hurts the argument for why you should buy the $499 affiliate pack, which is one of the ways you join as a affiliate or distributor. And BK even said this on another interview I heard recently, where it was a one of those Google meetups. And he was saying, well, one of the reasons you would buy a $499 kit to be an affiliate is to have inventory on hand. But if it's the same price that you bought it for that you're selling it for, there's no retail markup, because they want you to go online and just buy it and the company dropships. It's like an affiliate program. So if you have inventory, you can't mark it up and resell it. Well, you can, but they can sign up for free and get it for the wholesale price. Why would you ever buy it at some made-up retail price? So there is no incentive to have inventory to sell out of your home hand-to-hand. So the whole argument about why you would buy this $499 pack kind of goes out the window when there's no retail markup and no need to have on-hand inventory. But again, that doesn't make them not MLM, and it's not very unusual. Many other companies do that. Everyone now starts as a customer. Everyone does. You have to be a customer at first. But then you can become an affiliate by either enrolling another customer, because they want to incentivize people getting customers. This is why they're doing this. Or you can buy the $499 affiliate pack to become an affiliate, a distributor. Let's break this down. So you have to sign up as a customer. You go online, you sign up, boom, you're a customer. No other way to do it. So at that moment, you're a customer. Literally a few seconds later, you can go back into this customer account you just created, click on the $499 affiliate pack, and you're a distributor. So it is true that technically you are a customer for a few seconds. But that's not unlike most companies where you can just sign up as a distributor or sign up as an affiliate. The only difference is, in most other MLM companies, you can sign up as a distributor for whatever amount of product you want, and you're still a distributor. Here, you have to buy a $499 pack with product you can't mark up and resell, so you don't need inventory. For samples, maybe, and personal consumption, of course, but not for sales, unless you just want to sell it at cost. So what will happen now is that what it creates an incentive to do. Anytime I create a comp plan for a client, we always talk about, okay, here's what it incentivizes. Because a compensation plan, by the way, should never be designed to compensate. It should be designed to incentivize. And sometimes that creates a very different plan when you look at it that way. So every aspect of a plan should have an answer to the question, what behavior does this incentivize? Once we've determined that, we then ask the question, what unintended consequences can occur here? Like, for example, would this incentivize someone saying, well, I want to be an affiliate, I want to be a distributor, but I want to pay $500. I want to do like all these other MLM companies and be a distributor, but buy whatever amount of product I want. I only want $250 worth of product. Well, how can I do that? I know how. I'll go to my ex-wife and say, hey, Kathy, go online, sign up as a customer for free, put in my ID number. I'll buy the $250 worth of product for you, have it drop shipped to me, and now I've got a customer.
Cool.
So my customer makes me an affiliate. So, but the point is that it makes it harder to do that than to just go online and say, I'm just going to buy $250 worth of product. So but you can still get around it. And that's how a lot of people will probably get around it. That's what it incentivizes, that kind of behavior. These customers, by the way, when you sign up as a customer, I always thought, well, so you got to go out and enroll another affiliate or enroll another customer so you can get upgraded to affiliate. But how do you do that if you're a customer? You don't have access to all of the distributor-centric tools to help you get customers. The sales aides, the back office, the sales website, but you do. A customer has access to all of those things. Why would a customer want access to all of these things that would help a distributor get customers? So I guess the point there is that no state or federal regulator is going to look at that and buy it. Like, that's a customer. I mean, if they have access to all of the distributor stuff to help them acquire more customers. But they do. They have access to all of it. If someone says, okay, I'm going to sign up as an affiliate. I'm going to sign up as a customer, but I want to be an affiliate. But I have to sign up as a customer first. But I'll go out and actually get a real customer. That's how I'll earn my way up to become an affiliate. when you get a customer, you don't have to, but you can opt up to be an affiliate. So now, how many distributors do you think out there in any MLM company, what percentage, guys, do you think are people who want to be a successful distributor, not a customer, and they've just failed at any given point in time to recruit or sell a single customer? Probably pretty big percentage, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a very high percentage.
Yeah, any given moment of all the people that are distributors and just haven't enrolled their first person yet or made their first sale, at least 50%.
Yeah, and that's I think that's being generous.
Very generous, yeah.
Very generous.
So, but understand, all those people are now going to appear as customers on the book in Vima. So it is a way to make the customer number look much bigger, but in sort of an artificial way. These are not really customers who have said, I just want to be a customer. That's all I want. What these are essentially failing distributors who have just failed to recruit or enroll their first customer, but they're getting counted as customers still on the books. So again, no state or federal regulator is going to buy into that. And that, by the way, is not uncommon in how many other companies artificially inflate their customer numbers. So it's that's not getting away from that at all. How you should do this, if you really want to identify who's customers, do it kind of like USANA, for example, have it, and many other companies, a preferred customer program. I'm a preferred customer. I'm signing up as a preferred customer. I'm declaring I never want to be a distributor, at least right now. I may change my mind in the future. Sure, I can be a distributor if I want to. But right now, I just want the product cheaper because I just want to be a customer. I have no intent of ever recruiting or selling or anything like that. Then there's no doubt. So why don't they just do that? Then there's no doubt. Well, because if they did that, the number of quote-unquote customers would drop dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. Excuse me. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Question here. I really want to listen to this interview. Where do I listen to this?
Good question. Go to...
Well, before you answer, let me tell you why I want to know.
Okay.
Okay, because the bottom line is I pity the fool who tries to win an argument against Lynn. Okay? I am being absolutely serious. In our marriage relationship, we had...
Are you about to say that I won most of our arguments?
No, okay. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that in our various discussions when we were married, Lynn would have me so... I consider myself a fairly intelligent person. I graduated mm-hmm. college. Okay, I know that doesn't take a rocket scientist to do that, but, you know, a certain amount of intelligence. I would be so confused in the midst of my own argument, I wouldn't even know what my argument was. And that is the God's honest truth. So I'm serious when I say I pity the fool who tries to win an argument against Lynn, because it's virtually – I've never seen anyone succeed, including myself. So I guess that does mean that you won most of the arguments, which therefore kind of establishes why we're divorced. So, anyway, yeah. So no, I would really seriously like to listen to this discussion.
That would be on InsideNM.com for anyone listening to this who didn't go to that site, you know, to hear the show. And go to the podcast section. It's this podcast right before this one, number 25.
Excellent.
And by the way, John Gray once said in his book, he asked a very poignant question. Would you rather be right or happy?
Ah, yes.
If I would have read that book a couple of years sooner, we'd probably still be married.
You know what? You're probably right.
But the thing is, I don't want people to get the impression that I try to win arguments with the old, you know, that old saying, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with BS. You know, I really try not to have it be BS. I try to make it...
No,
like,
no, and that's not what I'm saying. You know what you're talking about, and that's therein lies the problem with anybody who tries to go up against you.
Yeah. Well,
even if it's just trying to convince you to take the garbage out, I wouldn't even know what my question was. You know, when you were dazzling me with BS about why the garbage was fine, even though it was overflowing into the kitchen floor. So anyway, I digress.
Well, I usually try to use logic. Like I'd be watching a show, there'd be 5 minutes left in the show, and I would say, Kathy, I can finish this show, then take the garbage out, and we both get what we want. Or I can take the garbage out now, but I lose a few minutes of my show, and it's not a win-win anymore.
Or I could just do it, and then you would be released from all responsibility. And that's usually what happens.
Right, and then I'd get the stink eye for the rest of the night.
Exactly.
All the guys out there who are still married or in relationships, I'm going to tell you right now, the last thing you should ever, ever use in an argument is logic. Do not use logic on women.
Okay. You know what? I think we better move on because this could be brutal.
Well, you know what? I think it's kind of interesting because as I was listening to the interview, seriously, man, I think it was really very interesting because you did, as you're going through these points, you were very clear and distinct about each and every point and coming back to it. And sometimes, as you say, frustration or overreaction to some of those points where I felt that, you know, BK was trying to convince you of how cool this was and how great it was, but there was never any evidence that could be shown to make it any different.
Yeah, this is something really that's more my frustration, I think, with other interviewers in the industry. And again, I won't name them, but you know, he's done a lot of interviews and out of the industry too, with a lot of mainstream publications, and you know, they seem to be doing the same thing. When you ask a question, and I don't want to just even pin this on BK, any interview subject, when you ask them a question and then their response is non-responsive, you don't just say, okay, ask and answer the next question. You call them out on it. You say, mm-hmm. That didn't answer
exactly
the question.
Right.
And nobody else is doing that.
No.
Like, I don't have examples of this other than just off the top of my head. I'm sure there's better ones. But in a recent interview with BK, he was asked something to the effect of, well, shouldn't distributors have some kind of incentive to have knowledge of the product, to be incentivized to get the product? I mean, if you only customer volume can count towards their volume, they don't have to buy the product. Well, how can they sell a product when they don't even have any personal experience with the product? And BK's response was, well, we're going to try to get them the product for free. If they get three customers, they get the product for free. So we're trying to not only get them more product, we're trying to get them more product for free. So in other words, he turned that question into an opportunity for a sales pitch, mm-hmm. an aspect of their comp plan. Now, what I would have done is said, okay, BDK, that's great for those people that get three customers, but what about the other 99% of your distributors? Okay, I mean, how about them? That question still applies to them. Now, by the way, I'm not even sure I even agree with the question, because it kind of implies like you should make them buy their own product, which I don't agree with. But my point is the question wasn't responded to, and
right.
They just let him off the hook and move on. Like, for example, in the interview that I did, he was trying to make a case that somehow, because a binary doesn't really have levels, that makes it not MLM, because they have this binary unilevel type comp plan, which, of course, on its face is kind of nonsensical, because that would make USANA and Monavie and all these other companies not MLM, which clearly they are, because binary doesn't make you not MLM. So what I did was I quoted in the FTC's definition mm-hmm. of what an MLM is, and it doesn't say a level-by-level structure. It says a consortium, a group, a tree. It uses all of these synonyms that can clearly bring in an income center, which is a term exclusive to binary plans. That's the language the FTC uses. So I said, look, they're counting all of these types of structures, these groupings of distributors. Not only that, but you also have a matching bonus. And the matching bonus is paid in a unilevel structure based on line of sponsorship. BK's response to that was 80% mm-hmm. of their commissions are paid out through the binary. So he came back and responded to that last point I made about the matching bonus, which again, didn't even respond to it really, because so 20% of your plan then, even if he was right about binaries, that means 20% of your plan is MLM. That means it's still MLM.
Right,
so
exactly.
There wasn't even a response to the question. But what about the part I just said about the FTC saying that binaries would still be MLM? And now you've just said 80% of your payout comes through that thing that I just said, the FTC says is MLM. Well, I didn't just move on. I went back and reiterated the FTC's definition again and said, that means you just said 80%. So, but again, nobody's coming back on that. They're just letting him answer the questions these ways and move on. And that's not how you get to the bottom of something, to an ultimate definitive answer to something. That's just not how you do it. I want to get down to this so we can get into the news here. So anyway, of all those things that they said they were doing differently, I think we left off, we were talking about, you know, everyone starts out as a customer. One thing really incriminating in that claim is customers. When you sign up as a customer, you go in the downline. You physically take a position in the downline under the person who sponsored you as a customer. And you can get spillover. You know, if someone in your upline can enroll someone into your downline as a customer, which, by the way, then creates a huge incentive for that customer to now go and buy some product through somebody else so they can become a distributor as quickly as possible.
Yep.
Just the whole thing is just goofy. Clearly, they're not customers. And no state or federal agency, I think anyone in the media who really looks at it, they're going to clearly see that those aren't really customers, just like they always see that in all these other companies that try things like that to artificially inflate the customer number. And it certainly doesn't make them not MLM. So anyway, BK asked me to name, I said in my interview, which was a lawyer's trick, I didn't imply he was a lawyer or that he was deliberately trying even to trick me, but he just inadvertently kind of stumbled on a great debating technique that I learned in college. He asked me to name one other MLM company that does all of the things that Vima does. You know, that whole long list that I just made of all these things are supposedly doing differently. And so let's say, you know, we have a checklist of 10 things. It wasn't 10, but let's just say 10. Now, if you were to ask me what MLM companies do all 10 of these things exactly like Vima, I probably couldn't give you an answer. Now, I can say, here's, out of 1,000 MLM companies, here's 700 that do number one. Here's 850 that do number two. Here's 575 that do number three. So, you know, in the aggregate, overall, what he's doing is extremely similar to virtually every other MLM company out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can look at Amway and take every aspect of how they do business and make a checklist and then say, what other MLM company is exactly like Amway? And I won't be able to check every one of those boxes. Does that make Amway not MLM? Because I can't check every single box, even though I can check most of them, and most companies are like every one of those things on the list. So, again, that was just, that doesn't really resolve the issue. They're doing things very, very similar to how the rest of the industry is doing it. Nothing makes them non-MLM other than you're just changing the titles for things. And by the way, some of the things that he said he believes is different than all other MLMs. He said, in the interview, he said that. He said some of the things they're doing are different than all other MLMs. They're entirely unique. The only thing that he's doing that's particularly unique, really, is the thing about the no sign-up fee. But again, there's a pretty strong case can be made there. That's not even a good thing for an MLM company to be doing. But anyway, that is debatable. You know, it's subjective. So the answer to the question, is this MLM? Again, he says, tell people it's not. It's more like affiliate marketing. I don't get that. That's Melaleuca has tried this already. And their distributors are mocked and laughed at and ridiculed every time they say they're not MLM. So why put Vima distributors in that position? And Amway's already tried this. Again, history can tell us if something works or not, because everything's been tried in this crazy business. They tried to create a whole new company and called it Quickstar. So when people say, is this Amway, they could technically, truthfully say, no, it's Quickstar. But then sooner or later, they would get into it and find out, oh, of course, it's Amway. And then obviously it didn't work. Quickstar's gone now. That didn't work. So it's, I think when the leaders, I'll summarize and we'll move on. When the leaders in this business, even one of the good guys, and I don't say that in quotes. I mean, BK really, really is. And he's looking out for his own distributors. Obviously, he's. I think he might even admit this. He didn't say it, but I'll give him credit. I think he'd even say he's being selfish. You know, he's trying to protect his own distributors, his own group. You know, that's his number one priority, and as it should be. I'm not sure this is really going to protect his distributors, though. And when you're part of an industry, I think you do have at least some responsibility to protect that industry. Because, again, if that industry sinks, you're going right along with it to the bottom. But anyway, I know he's trying to, you know, do what's best for his own distributors. But even when these good guys and these leaders do something a little goofy, don't just obligatorily praise them and blindly congratulate them for all of their quote-unquote changes. Just push back a little. Ask some tough questions and challenge them and demand that they address the challenge rather than just allow them to use it as an opportunity to make a sales pitch. So, I don't know. I'm wondering if my big peeve right now might even be with other interviewers right now than PK, but I'm the only one that seems to be asking these questions, at least publicly and directly to PK.
I've always said, and you agree, that you should have always been a prosecutor.
Yeah, if I only had a dollar.
Yeah.
I know. A few years ago, I actually considered. I found out I'm 2.5 years away from getting a law degree. I have enough credits in college already to.
I think you should do it. I absolutely think you should do it.
Now, at 56, it'd be kind of tough, but I don't
there's
know.
That's ridiculous. It's just a number. People get talk about getting hung up on titles. You know, it's just a number.
You're right. It's all that represents is the number of times the Earth has orbited the sun since the day I was born.
And really, what does that matter? Nothing.
Yeah, on Mars, I'm in my mid-30s.
Exactly.
You know what, Lynn, I think as you were talking, I think it really comes down to something in terms of when you look at where, you know, and just use BK for an example, where he's getting most of his new distributors from who are in that, you know, very young age and may not have the experience yet of most people who are recirculating through the industry. So it seems like to me what he's trying to do is just grow that group more so than grow and protect that group than to defend the entire industry.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
I think so. That's a good point, Randy.
Yeah, and again, something could be said for, you know, maybe that's a valid position to take. But if we weren't under so much attack right now as an industry,
exactly,
because,
yeah,
again, this is not an Herbalife attack. This is an attack on the industry. And the anti-side is very organized, and they're writing white papers and sending them to the FTC, and now we've got, well, and this kind of gets into some of our news items, but there's a lot of stuff going on right now that of all the time throughout MLM history, this is kind of the worst one to try to deny your MLM and not defend it. So, speaking of the news, Kathy, our news girl, and by the way, I had an email from someone that said that was offensive.
What?
Because I called you a girl.
I am a girl. Last time I checked.
Yeah, I think you got the requisite number of X chromosomes. Last I saw. But
you know, I think number one, people really just need to relax and not take everything so freaking seriously.
I think there's more important things going on in the world than what Len Clements calls his ex-wife on his silly little podcast.
And you've certainly called me worse than girl. I mean, let's just cut to the chase.
Someone actually burnt the calories to write that email.
You know what? Whoever wrote the email, thank you. But you know what? It's just concentrate on world peace.
Yes.
Okay? Really, mm-hmm. That's so much more important.
So,
yes.
Kathy.
Yes.
The news.
Well, you were talking about Herbalife. Herbalife just happens to be front and center of my first story. I'll tell you, they're already hit with SEC and FTC investigation. Now, poor Herbalife, which has been around since I think Jesus was a distributor, is now under investigation by the attorney generals of both New York and Illinois, as well as, allegedly, being suspect of a criminal investigation by the FBI. What is going on? Herbalife is like American as apple pie, isn't it?
I mean, yeah. I mean, some people actually think of it that way. I mean, you know, some people actually think that, you know, it's just a really good health and nutrition company, so...
Well, let me go on.
Okay.
There are two class action lawsuits filed on behalf of Herbalife investors alleging that Herbalife did not disclose to investors that they were operating a pyramid scheme. All of the legal and investigative actions followed by the efforts by short seller Bill Ackman's campaign to expose the company as an illegal pyramid. Ackman has hired a team of lobbyists to encourage states and federal regulators to take down Herbalife. That's like taking down a Girl Scout, isn't it? If successful, Ackman stands to gain over $1 billion with a B, dollars in profits from his short position. What of this, Len Clements?
Well, first of all, I will say, Jesus was a great networker.
Yes, he was.
He had 12 people on his front line. Oh, and very little attrition, only one quit. But anyway.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, and but no, it's and if anyone wants an expose of Ackman, you can go to my site into the alerts section. There's an article where I did kind of exposing a lot of the junk that he was doing and all of the claims he's saying that aren't true and that you would think CNBC or somebody else would be doing. But the New York Post, I believe it was, finally did do an expose of Ackman and found out that a lot of the complaints he was sending to the FTC were just carbon copies of the same complaint signed by people that when they would call them and ask them, why did you sign this complaint? They would go, I never signed a complaint. Mm. You know, that kind of thing. Mm. And he's hiring all these lobbyists to go to all of these different AGs and senators and so forth to help him in his ability to make $1 billion from his short position. See, if Herbalife goes out of business and their stock goes to zero, you make $1 billion. Wow. For people aren't familiar with the stock market, shorting a stock means you make money by the stock going down. So if he can make the stock go down, he makes millions or billions of dollars. So he does have a little bit of a financial incentive here to come up with a bunch of crap about them. Just kind of backing up. So people are clear on this. The SEC, the FTC, the FBI, they're all supposedly investigating Herbalife to varying degrees. As I've always said, those aren't necessarily the most deadly. Who an MLM company's really got to be concerned with is ABC, NBC, and CBS. Mm. And it has leaked out there is a 2020 exposé of Herbalife in the works. So I'm sure that's not going to be pretty, and I have no doubt in my mind when they get to their quote MLM expert to interview during the segment, it won't be someone who actually knows anything about MLM. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now. Here's my guess. Here's my put Vegas odds on this guy, Robert Fitzpatrick. In the 2020 interview, you watch. He's going to be their MLM expert, even though he's never spent a day as an MLM distributor in his life and actually believes downlines are diamond-shaped.
You're escalating again. Okay, let's bring it down. Why don't you call the producers and say, hello, you want somebody that's unbiased, that can give you honest analysis, send them your book and all of your resume. Get in front of these people.
You assume such contacts have not already been attempted.
Well, I digress. Yes. Shame on me.
But what will probably happen, and I'll digress just slightly, when Penn and Teller, who's here in Vegas, you know, they have a Showtime show, which is canceled now, but it was called, and again, we're all big boys and girls on the show, so I get to say bad words because it's a podcast, because the FCC can't control it. The show is called Bullshit. Literally, that's what was the name of the show. And they did all these exposés, kind of like skeptics of all these various different things, like dowsing and the psychics, all that kind of stuff. And some of them good, some not so good. But, you know, I'm kind of always been a fan of it. I'm kind of a skeptic myself. But they did a segment on MLM.
No kidding.
Yeah. They did a segment on MLM. And, of course, they just ripped us apart. Made us look like
idiots. Yeah, Teller did?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Of course, when they picked two companies to showcase during the segment, they picked one that did home parties for women with sex toys, and the other one was one called Man Cave, where these guys all got together and sold like barbecue equipment or something. I don't know. But you wouldn't, I mean, like, you know, no, they wouldn't put in, you know, USANA or Vima or some good legitimate MLM company because that would just screw up the whole show, right?
Right.
But there was a guy that was featured on that show who was a Zhree distributor at the time, and they made him look like a total goofball trying to sell his Zhree juice. But he called me. He knows me. He said, Len, they've asked me to be on the show. Should I do it? He's looking for guidance. And I said, you know, someone's going to do it. You might as well get the free publicity. You get to be on television. Mm-hmm. And so he did. But I asked him, I said, you know, can you tell the producers that right here in Vegas, where they produce the show, Bullshit, that there's an MLM expert, court-certified expert, and I'm not oppositorily all pro-MLM. Obviously, I'm kind of somewhat biased. I agree. I think the industry is a good industry. But I know what's good and what's bad and can tell the difference. Unlike Robert Fitzpatrick, some of these other guys, where they're all pyramid schemes. Well, no. Yep. Some are, some aren't, and I know the difference. And his response back to me was, Len, I've already told them about you, and they said they were already aware of you. And I said, oh, cool. So do you think it might happen? He goes, no. They said, now again, I'm getting this secondhand, and I'm sure he's paraphrasing, but they said, they did not want a quote-unquote pro MLM expert.
Oh,
so guess who they got as their quote-unquote MLM expert during the segment about MLM? Robert Fitzpatrick.
Oh, my God.
Who, again, who literally believes downlines... I just heard him interviewed again the other day. The downlines are diamond-shaped. The widest point is the base. In other words, 525, 125, and zero. Then somehow, instantaneously, in mass, 625 people appear. None of them recruited a single person. And then suddenly, instantaneously, 3,125 people or whatever the next generation is appear, and none of them recruited the same. He actually thinks that's how they form. And he's their go-to, quote-unquote, MLM expert.
I'm not kidding. You should not let this drop, because it makes me ashamed that journalism was my minor, because this is how far journalists and journalism has fallen. It's just, it's deplorable and it's disgusting.
I get Penn and Teller because that's entertainment. They got to make caricatures out of everything. Although now I mistrust every other show I ever watched. But 2020,
I mean, come on. That's what I was referring to. You should not let this drop. You shouldn't let this drop. You should get some kind of kudos and somebody to go to bat for you.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
Okay, good.
And at this point, the 2020 thing may already be done. Because it's just leaked out that it's going to happen, but it may only be finished. Production may be finished. I don't know. We'll see. Here's the thing. The SEC inquiry is an informal inquiry. Of course, in the media, the anti-MLM crowd, they're going to call it an investigation. There's a difference between an SEC investigation and informal inquiry. The SEC has already done informal inquiries against USANA and Herbalife back in 2008 when the whole Barry Minkow thing happened. That's another story. Barry Minkow is basically kind of like Ackman. He makes money by making their stock go down, except Minkow was doing more of an extortion plot, which is why he's back in prison right now. But anyway, so already been there, done that. Now, an informal inquiry by the SEC is one where they can go in and they look for anything, the least bit suspect, the line that you got at the threshold to go from an informal inquiry to a formal investigation is so small. I mean, the slightest little bit of impropriety, they will escalate it to a formal investigation. They found nothing. Remember, this is 2008, right? So, and by the way, informal inquiries have no definitive end. I mean, 50 years from now, we could still technically say there's an informal inquiry going on, because the SEC doesn't say we're done with the inquiry. USANA actually had to ask them 10 months later, okay, we know you're done inquiring. Can you put a notice out saying you're done with your inquiry? Because people are still saying you're investigating us, which they did, by the way. But unless you ask, I guess, they don't announce a definitive end to it. So that may already be over. The FTC is investigating Herbalife. That's a full investigation. It's ongoing. People say it's going to be sometime next year it'll get resolved. I think it'll be sooner, maybe it'll be by the end of the summer. I think it'll probably be in Herbalife's favor. The only thing that concerns me, though, is, again, that they're only hearing from the prosecution and Herbalife having to defend itself, and the industry should help defend it and blah, blah, blah. But that's a podcast to talk about the advocacy organization I'm trying to form for another day. If you get me on that, that'll be the rest of the show. But anyway, the FTC is actually investigating them. Now, we've just heard recently the FBI has started a criminal investigation. Ooh, shudder. That sounds so bad, doesn't it? Criminal
investigation. It does. It sounds FBI. Terrible.
Oh, boy. Well, here's the truth behind that. There was a publication out there kind of leaked this out that they had found out that the FBI had called some Herbalife distributors, ex-Herbalife distributors, to ask them about their experience with the company. Now, if you're the subject of a question like that, you can legally tell people, hey, the FBI called me and asked me about Herbalife. You're a civilian. You can talk about that all you want. And so, of course, obviously they did. Now, if the FBI was investigating Herbalife on a criminal investigation, if they really were doing that, no one would know it. And it would actually be a criminal offense for someone in the FBI to leak that. Because the FBI, you find out when the FBI has been criminally investigating you when guys with guns barge through the front door of your home office. Because they don't want you to destroy evidence. So when they call a bunch of your ex-distributors openly and allow those distributors to just talk all they want about how the FBI just called me and asked me about it, that means there's not an investigation. Okay?
Wow.
Exactly the opposite.
Interesting.
So now, the result of those calls may result in an investigation at some point in the future, but this explains why, in Herbalife's statement, they said, we've never been requested anything by the FBI. So we're not aware of any investigation. Now, again, if it was behind the scenes, they wouldn't be. But if they're trying to hide an investigation so they don't destroy evidence, why are you calling your ex-distributors? You wouldn't do that, because that would obviously expose your quote-unquote investigation. So, but again, this informal inquiry, I guess you could call it, by the FBI a few weeks ago has somehow made it through the grapevine where the media and the anti-MLM crowd are calling it a criminal investigation. And, of course, the stock dropped like, I don't know, 12% the day that news came out. Now, the New York and Illinois AGs both have just started an investigation. And here's what's screwy about that. First of all, these are all states that Ackman's lobbyists have lobbied to take action against Herbalife. And other states, like the Nevada AG, for example, I know, because this is out in the news, said she didn't find anything. She said, I looked at Herbalife, I just don't see it. So, yeah, his lobbyists came to me, too. I just don't see it. And apparently, 48, wait, how many states are there?
50?
For a second, I almost thought there were 52 states. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Len. Anyway, yeah, there's 40 other attorney generals apparently didn't believe them either, but two of them have. Now, here's the difference. Here's the key distinction. Attorney general is an elected position. There's midterm elections coming up in a few months. There are 13 states where the attorney general is up for election. I'll give you one guess if New York and Illinois are amongst them. Of course they are. So what better way? Because think about this. If the SEC and FTC and FBI were already investigating them, and for sure the FBI or the FTC is, why would you want to waste all of your state's resources to investigate the same company on the same premise? It makes absolutely no sense for a state AG to start investigating Herbalife on the exact same things that the FTC is looking at them at. No sense whatsoever. There's only one reason why an AG of those states would be doing this. Free press. That's it. We're going to get up in the news. All this press release went out. All the news agencies are talking about it. The AG is standing up for the constituency and for the people to protect them against this really bad, nasty pyramid scheme. So, you know, we're going to defend the people of Illinois and New York and blah, blah, blah. That's it. It's votes. It's all about votes. That's my opinion, by the way, based on how it appears, which is what my attorney said I can say, so I'm protected by the First Amendment. I'm not saying it's a fact, just my opinion based on how it appears. But
I learn on this show.
There's no other
amazing.
Possible reason for them to be doing this, other than to get some free press out of it. So it's and by the way, if the FTC does come back and say nothing's wrong with Herbalife, both of those cases will be dropped instantly. Same with, by the way, the class action lawsuits that are all popping up all over the place. Here's how class action lawsuits work. A whole bunch of attorneys or law firms start putting out class action lawsuits because if the FTC does take down Herbalife or in some way really harm them and cause their stock to drop dramatically, then you might have a class action lawsuit against, and they say Herbalife is a pyramid scheme. Now, it's ridiculous to say that this class action lawsuit is based because Herbalife didn't disclose to their shareholders that they were operating a pyramid scheme. Well, it's probably because Herbalife doesn't think they are, I'm guessing. Not that they knew they were and were hiding it from their shareholders. But if they do get deemed a pyramid scheme, now you've got a legitimate shareholder lawsuit. But you only get one class action lawsuit. Only one law firm gets to make millions of dollars from this class action lawsuit. So what happens way in advance of that? They all start creating class action lawsuits all over the place. Some of these class action lawsuits have no class members. They're advertising for class members. If you are an investor of Herbalife, call us and get involved with this class. It costs you nothing. We'll represent you if they get deemed a pyramid scheme. Blah, 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 blah. And then, at some point, the judge will combine all the class action lawsuits into one. And whoever has the most players gets to be the one remaining last man standing in that war to see who gets to represent all these shareholders. So that's why all these law firms right now are creating class action lawsuits. Look, go. Pacer is something worth signing up for. I think it's $25 or something, whatever it is. It's been so long since I paid for it, I don't remember what it is. But, I mean, you can get all these lawsuits or whatever. Actually, look at them. Some of them have no class members. There's no actual people involved in the lawsuit. They're soliciting for class members. And the most recent one, which is Leif Cabraser out of San Francisco, they do this all the time. They sue MLM companies like crazy every time something like this happens. It's just part of their standard operating procedure. And if Herbalife comes back and they say they're not a pyramid, they'll just drop the suit. That'll be the end of it. So that's how all these class action lawsuits are working. Just when you see all those in the news, that's what that's all about. Now, final point on this is I hope now that Telex Free, which kind of looks like they were a pyramid scheme, they were shut down in Brazil, and now the SEC has just shut them down here in the United States, actually caught their CFO when they raided the home office. They actually caught him going out the back door with $37 million of cashier's checks in a suitcase.
Get out of here.
Yeah. By the way, only a few weeks after they filed bankruptcy.
Interesting.
I bet you that $37 million wasn't disclosed in the bankruptcy. Just guessing.
But wow.
Anyway, now that they get to take a look at what an actual scheme looks like, and they can contrast it with this really great company called Herbalife that has like 8,000 employees.
Right.
And is in like, what, 60-something countries and sponsors professional sports teams and stadiums and produces literally billions of dollars of tax revenue and all of that entails. And there's roughly 9,500,000 Herbalife distributors that are actually making full-time income from their business. Herbalife's paid over $8 billion in commission since the year 2000. That's got to be going to somebody. So it's, all those losing distributors. But anyway, the point is that when they compare that to Telex Free, maybe people out there will start getting, there is kind of a difference between those two companies, isn't there? So anyway, there's a lot of truths and missing information about all these so-called investigations going on with Herbalife right now. I could get into a lot more detail, obviously, but that's the rundown of how all of them are actually working right now.
Well, I know you're on a roll, but we are past our time if you're interested in such things.
Yes, I know. We are actually, I think, 2 minutes over time, and I do try to keep these under an hour. I'm sure there were some other news items that we had to talk about, but you know what? We Just real quickly, I know one thing that's caught out there, people are talking about, where Dave Sharp did resign as the co-founder of Empower Network. He's gone now. I don't know how you resign as a co-founder. You're always going to be a co-founder. I think what they kind of mean is more like the co-manager.
Right.
He sold out his share. He's gone. He's completely gone for health reasons. He's very open. He has Hep C. He used to be a drug user a long time. He's got to deal with that. Great reason to go retire and take care of yourself. But it is true. He is completely gone. It's now Dave Wood and their CEO. They hired Jonathan Konstedt. I'm not sure if I pronounced his name right. They hired a CEO back in December, and that was a couple of months after Dave Wood admitted that he had an affair and got somebody pregnant, and so now his wife's getting a divorce. And now Dave Sharp's obviously with these health issues. So, yeah, I think they're trying to bring in some new people to run the company while they kind of take care of their own personal issues.
Might be a good idea.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, Dave Sharp is gone. I know that's people have asked me about that, so I wanted to at least include that little snippet. But you're right. We are out of time. Thank you, Randy.
Right.
Thank you, Kathy. I know I talk too much.
In
future shows, we'll try to get more of your input, I swear, but this is
that's your opinion, Randy, but that's all right.
I guess you have more insight on that than I do.
That's for another day, another time.
No, this FEMA thing was just, I don't know, I was kind of passionate about it. But we'll have more interaction, I swear, on future topics. So anyway, thank you, everybody.
No, it was very, very good. You know I'm teasing you. I don't want people to think that, Len and I are very, very good friends. All of this is in really affection and admiration. So don't think that. We have a very, very friendly relationship.
Yeah, evidenced by the fact that, you know, you're on my podcast. So
that's a good sign, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would say so. Okay.
Okay, thanks guys.
So
appreciate it. All thanks to all the listeners. See we'll see
Bye.
You back here in about a week. All right. Have a good week.
Go Giants.
Bye. Yes. Go Danica and Val.
Go, I can't think of the one go. I like.
All the listeners are saying, go away.
Okay, then.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.